Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, everyone. This is Keena Wolfenstein, and you're listening to the Complex Trauma Recovery Podcast. Thank you for being here. Before I announce today's guest and topic, let me just go over my few show notes. So in the podcast description, you will find my link tree. In my link tree, there are a bunch of different resources, including my workshops, my Patreon, and a link where you can choose to support the podcast if you want to. There's also the link to my practice website. We still have a therapist taking some new clients in Texas. So you can check those resources out below. My Patreon has a bunch of additional resources, especially resources designed for therapists that are wanting to learn more about experiential trauma therapy. And my guest today is Stephanie Goldsmith, and we are talking about Gestalt therapy. So this is one of the kind of more experiential modalities that I just didn't know as much about and hadn't had anyone on to talk about yet. So I thought it would be a fun topic to explore. And it was a really fun topic. I learned a lot. You know, there's a lot of overlap between all these different experiential modalities. So we just kind of talked about what Gestalt therapy is like, how it works in conjunction with parts work and for complex trauma, and talked about all kinds of other good stuff too. So I hope you guys enjoyed this interview, and I am including Stephanie's bio and links below for people that want to learn more. Okay. Hi, Stephanie. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Okay. So, could you just start by kind of giving like an introduction to Gestalt therapy for people that haven't heard of it or don't really know much about it?
Yes, happy to do that. And I am going to give the disclaimer that I've actually been to talks about why is Gestalt so hard to define.
Oh,
so I'm
going to
do my best here. Yeah, it's not a very easy elevator pitch, but I will do my best.
Okay.
So Gestalt is a holistic style of therapy that focuses on helping clients gain awareness in their individual process. Gestalt therapists aid in the achievement of awareness by inviting an authentic dialogue between the client and the therapist, by considering the client's experience in the context of their life and greater contributing global factors, and by exploring their individual phenomenology. So then the client learns to become aware of what they do, how they do it, and the impact of their patterns on their well-being, which allows for the client to be the expert on their own experience and their needs, and the therapist can act as that compassionate and curious guide. So I like to think of Gestalt therapy as helping the client discover their owner's manual for themselves. Mm-hmm. And then that way they can go about in their regular life, having their understanding of their process, and they can troubleshoot as they go. So what I like about it is the maintenance of gains is really good. So once they understand themselves well, when they get triggered or when something comes up, they know a lot about themselves and how to take care of themselves. So it's not just an individual incident. It goes with them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, that's cool. So when you're helping people get to know like their user manual, so to speak, what are the kinds of things that usually includes? Like, what are you helping people discover and understand about themselves as people?
Sure. So let's say they come in because they're having problems at work, and maybe they have a boss that's really critical. And it's not, okay, how can you speak better to your boss, or how could you be a better worker? It's, what does that bring up in you? You know, mm-hmm. What do you notice when you have that kind of interaction? You know, do you know it from your history? What happens specifically with this person? Does it do something in your body? Do you get tense and clench up? Mm-hmm. What's the emotion that comes along with it? And as we help them kind of discover what happens in that interaction, it's no longer just what happens with them and their boss. It's, 10 years down the road, some other person's going to do that again. Something else is going to trigger them and they'll have a similar reaction. And they'll say, ah, I don't like it when people put me in this place. I don't like it when I feel criticized. It really does this whole thing to me. So we really have them discover what happens in their body, what their thought process is like, and maybe what emotions get triggered. So it's very holistic.
Yeah, so like vulnerabilities, and does it, I you didn't use the phrase core beliefs, but does it have, some part of, exploring like emotional learnings, or kind of like what is that bringing up in you in terms of like what does that remind you of, or those kinds of things?
Sure, it can be. We don't usually use that term, but it's the same thing because it's
Yeah.
any process. And what I like about it is we're not focusing on just cognitions or just the somatic experience or just the emotional experience. It's what does happen for you. And if people get stuck, because you have clients that can't name their feelings, or you have clients who really are very cut off from their bodies, then we can direct it. Does anything happen? Do you notice something? Does something get tense? And we can help them discover it. But yeah, I mean, people's core beliefs really become, characterological. It's something that gets stuck and they continue to have this be a truth in their life. And if it's something that they think is true without exploring it, it helps, it makes decisions without their awareness.
Yeah, so you're bringing all of that kind of subconscious stuff into like full consciousness, it sounds like.
Yes. So awareness is our goal. Once you become aware of what you do, now you have more choices. Now you can decide, now that I know this about me, what works best for me? What can I do? What are my options? Even if it's a bad situation, there's no good options. It's like, which is the least bad option? But they have that accessible now where they might not have had it if it had become characterological.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, it sounds very integrative, like not focused on just one or two particular points, but kind of trying to bring in like the whole scope of the human experience, right?
Yes.
Okay, so is it experiential?
Very much so. Yes. A lot of it is we like to use experiments. Some of the ones that are popular that people know about are things like the empty chair, which is
I was going to ask about that.
I like to think of the empty chair as kind of like the grandfather of parts work because it's a form of parts work, and that's why, I mean, for me in my practice, I love doing parts work and IFS stuff because it pairs so harmoniously with my training as a Gestalt therapist. But yes, we do a lot of experiments that are very experiential in nature. Some of it's imaginal, some of it's physically getting up and moving your body. Sometimes we'll have people exaggerate and might say, oh, that makes me really angry. And I'll be like, can you actually say that like you're angry and see what it's like to have that in your body to call up that energy? And, does it fit? Does it not? If it doesn't fit, what's going on there? If it does, hey, why do you typically kind of keep yourself smaller or say it quietly? So there's a lot of stuff that's really experiential so that they really like take command of their processes.
I love that. Yeah, that sounds really similar to some of the stuff that I do in coherence therapy too, where like you'll have people do these overt statements where they're kind of trying to like speak from the limbic system and speak from like the most like emotionally, charged and activated parts of them, and like bringing things into the room instead of just like reflecting on them and analyzing them. So definitely seems like there's a lot of overlap between, yeah, parts work and other experiential modalities with that.
I totally agree. And it's bottom up, right? Like a lot of these other therapies. So it's how do I learn from my body? How do I learn from my emotions? Let that inform my experience.
Yeah, very cool. And for people that don't know, can you explain the empty chair exercise?
And again, I find it funny because I feel like when people who don't really know what Gestalt therapy is, but they've kind of heard of it, that's like one
That's
of
the
two
first
things they
thing.
bring up. They say, oh, the sum is greater than the whole of its parts, an empty chair, right? And I'm like, yes, that's like 1%.
That's funny.
What people know. The empty chair is used for unfinished business. So if there is something going on with another in your life, whether past or present, whether they're alive or dead, you can place, so to speak, the other person in an empty chair, and then you do a dialogue with them. And the idea there is to evoke the experience that's unfinished, the thing that keeps getting stuck. So, if somebody grew up in an abusive childhood, they have these narratives that play out. They play out in their current relationships. et cetera. And the idea is to be able to go to, you know, usually the origin of this process, and then you can work it out. So you have them speak as themselves to the person who holds that unfinished business. Mm-hmm. And then there's that dialogue, and then we help kind of evoke that emotional process so that it can really arrive and can really inform. So mm-hmm. that's the quick and dirty explanation of what an empty mm-hmm. chair exercise is.
Mm-hmm. No, it's very cool. And it definitely seems like a lot of this would facilitate like emotional release for people too, like as well as awareness, kind of giving people the chance to actually like, kind of like externalize and like, you know, experience and process big feelings that are sometimes suppressed or held inside or contained.
Yeah, it absolutely does that. A lot of times you'll see a catharsis, which is, great. But there's like that extra step that's so important. So once somebody has that big emotional experience, it's so that they learn from it too. So we mm-hmm. like to do what we call reflection and assimilation. So, you know, what came up for you? What do you know about it? You know, what are your needs based on that? Mm-hmm. And what we do is we really have them like take in, like really assimilate what they learned from that. So that helps really build that owner's manual. That helps it so that they mm-hmm. know, oh, if there's somebody who reminds me of my abuser, right. You know, and in some way, I know this now about me. I know what my needs are. I know what my boundaries are because I've now worked through and had this experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that makes sense. Yeah. So you're on the topic of, you know, abuse or trauma or that kind of thing. Can you speak a little bit to how you notice this kind of modality working for people that do have complex trauma? And like, what do you like about it for working with trauma?
So describing how Gestalt therapy is great for working with trauma is totally my jam. Like, it's okay. My favorite thing.
Perfect.
I've done a couple lectures. I actually just had the pleasure of virtually, of course, because it's not a safe region, but I just did a two-part workshop with the Kiev Institute of Gestalt and Psychodrama, specifically on trauma therapy, which was really surreal because it's talking about trauma therapy with like a traumatized population. So mm-hmm. it's 50, you know, Ukrainian therapists talking about how to work with it.
Wow.
Yeah, but the idea is because we work so closely with implicit memory processes, you know, the idea of the stuff that's outside of your awareness, mm-hmm. when you can bring these things into awareness, now you can make choices. So much of what happens from trauma is something that gets coded so deep in our limbic system that we don't really have a lot of cognitive awareness around it. So sometimes it feels like our bodies are hijacked. And the idea is not to avoid that feeling in session, but if that feeling comes up, to be able to work with it in the moment so that you can start to gain some understanding and agency and awareness of it. Mm-hmm. So, sometimes if I'm doing a trauma protocol, I'll kind of help them bring it up, almost like what you do in EMDR. You can create a script, you know, and you can have them bring it up and discover the body process around it, the cognitions around it, the emotions around it, and really have them kind of get in touch with it and see how it informs them and see what they need. And sometimes I'll see people, especially when it's complex trauma and they were traumatized very early on, mm-hmm. you can see their body almost become childlike, mm-hmm. right? So sometimes I'll have them assume a child's posture and I'll have them almost act out like, you know, what does the child need? Then you kind of get into the parts work piece of it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can really help them kind of almost finish some of these processes that had really gotten arrested. So because it's experiential, because it works with character or implicit memory or procedural memory, it really helps unlock that. So we're working with that right brain process that's mm-hmm. not always verbal, not always aware of the time frame.
Yes.
Help them work with all the stuff that feels less intellectual, less rational.
Yes. See, this is my stuff. This is where I get really excited and start lighting up with the implicit memory and kind of the, to borrow the name of the book that I always reference, the unlocking the emotional brain, you know, kind of side of things. So that's really exciting. So because you're having people kind of do these different like experiential ways of engaging with like their patterns and their experiences, it brings that kind of implicit emotional learning up and it brings it into conscious awareness. Even those things that you were saying maybe are not verbal or, you know, don't have like, we might not have the words for it, but we can connect with like the sensation and the internal experience of it with that kind of therapy. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And again, because it's experiential, you can do all kinds of cool things like move around in the room. And not too long ago, I ended up playing hide and seek with, you know, an adult person, but they had a child who was really scared. And I said, what does the scared child need? I need to hide. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, where would you like to hide? And where would you like me to be in the room? And what that, it just unlocks all these things that have otherwise been so stuck. And it's just a lot of permission to get creative and work with whatever the client's needing in the moment.
Yes. I love that. That's really, really, really cool. Yeah. It's hearing you describe it, it does sound so similar to like parts work and coherence therapy and these other things, but it seems like it has an additional layer of like this creative, like playful expression of it that seems a little bit different than other kinds of therapy I've been trained in or experienced, like the idea of actually embodying it, not just in the way where you're like, okay, yeah, I'm feeling it in my body, but embodying it, like acting it out or like moving around the room, or it seems like that is a really cool additional layer of experiential processing.
It can be. I had this wonderful mentor who had me at one point when I was first learning how to do Gestalt therapy. And I was telling him about a client and he says, can you go sit on the couch and sit the way that the client does? And I remember I was young and I was like, this is really awkward.
Yeah.
I went and did what he did. Actually, it's a good experience because I can have, you know, some empathy for my clients when I ask them to do these kinds of things. But
yeah,
you know, I went and I sat on the couch and I sat how the client did, which was pretty hunched over and very in their experience. And I tilted my head like they did. I brought myself in. And I started crying because it was just such a powerful posture. And I felt such a, I don't know, warmth and compassion overcome in my body for, you know, this client and what their experience must be like. And, and even just that tiny little exercise showed me the power of, you know, what we can do with our bodies and our experiences if we're open to it.
Wow. That's cool. You know, you brought up a good point there that I would love to ask you about, which is like the fact that this experiential stuff, even though it can be so powerful and so cool, it definitely can feel like awkward, awkward and weird for people, especially when you're not used to it. Like when you're used to just being in more, you know, analytical talk therapy where you get to just be up in your head and analyzing things. And then suddenly you're being asked to, you know, embody these like really deep inner experiences. So what's your experience with that? Like, how do you help people, I guess, ease into a place where they're able to engage at that level?
Oh, it's a good question. And there's some people who lend themselves more readily to this work than others. And I've certainly run into, you know, the clients who just tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Or the clients who say, what do you mean? I can't do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I like again is how forgiving Gestalt therapy can be about that, because our perspective isn't that the client is resistant. It's that they don't have enough self-support to do this yet. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I treat it like anything else. Like, oh, tell me about that. You know, I offered to do this thing and I noticed you really didn't want to. What's going on there? And then it becomes so available in the work again, because it's not to get them to do the thing. We have we have this phrase, what gets in the way of the work is the work.
I love that. I'm going to borrow that.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you, it gives me so much permission as a therapist. I don't have to get there and make them do the thing. It's if I work with whatever this block is, you know, that block probably comes in their life anyway. Oh, they stop themselves from doing other things. So, hey, tell me what the no is. And I respect the no. If ultimately they say, I'm not going to do that, I'm not going to make them do that. But I can work with the no, and I can say, tell me about the no, you know, what would happen if you did? Can you imagine what would happen for you? What would happen between us?
Yeah.
What would it be like for me to watch you go sit on the couch that way? Mm-hmm. So you just work with whatever is alive and present in the room. So it's fabulous because it gives so much permission to discover what we call their phenomenology, their way of existing in the world, what they've learned and how they've adapted to be who they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that line. I have frequently said, you know, to work like with blocks instead of against them, or that, you know, you don't want to bulldoze through blocks. You want to work with those as like protective parts, you know, that people have that are serving a function. But that line that what gets in the way of the work is like such a beautiful way to capture that.
I think that's one of the reasons why I've like really kind of pulled in some IFS, because that's like they call them protectors, right? So we work with protector parts, and which are blocking parts that don't let us get to the thing that's more vulnerable. In IFS being the exiles, we do the same thing in Gestalt. We just call it something different.
That's one of the things I've noticed as I've done these interviews with different therapists about different experiential modalities, is there's so much overlap. It's really interesting. It's like a lot of it, I'm like, oh yeah, we're all kind of doing the same stuff, you know, but we're just kind of doing it with like different words and like maybe different interventions or different tools. But there's like some really core pieces that seem like very consistent across all these modalities. Have you found that?
I do. And I don't get nervous about it. I find that some people get really stuck in their camp and they get really offended to think that another therapy might be useful.
Right.
I don't know. I get really nervous when I hear anybody's a purist in anything, because why would you ever give up any tool that could help healing?
Mm-hmm. So 100%.
I'm an integrator. Like, yes. I'm really happy to, you know, I do EMDR and I do tapping and I do IFS. I do all this other stuff, but my core language is Gestalt, but I bring in all these other elements because some clients need those things.
Yep. I totally agree. Yeah. I do mostly coherence therapy and IFS and somatic experiencing, but I'm hearing you know, talk about Gestalt and I'm like, oh, I feel like I do some of this too. Like it all fits together in a really cool way.
It's all a big, happy, you know, process experiential therapy life. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Cool. This is just like an interest of mine, but could you talk a little bit about shame with these kinds of therapies? Because I'm sure you found, obviously, like shame is really common with complex trauma. And I just always love hearing people's experience with like how does that kind of work with experiential therapy?
Oh, definitely. It comes up everywhere, especially since, you know, my specialty is working with trauma. So I see shame and anything in that kind of like self-evaluative realm, shame, guilt, embarrassment, they're all kind of in the same little cluster. Mm-hmm. You know, and shame is a learned response. So I work with the learning of it. Mm-hmm. You know, how does shame arrive? You know, there's plenty of things that I would do and I wouldn't feel ashamed, and somebody else would do and they feel shamed by it. So I'm curious of how did they come by that experience? Mm-hmm. I'm very gentle with it. I think Gestalt therapy can sometimes get a bad rap, because if you watch some of the old films, like the Gloria tapes with Fritz Perls, he like yells at her and people get scared.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I was like, well, that's how Fritz did Gestalt therapy. There's a lot of, you know, each person brings themselves to the room. We're very authentic as therapists. So how I am with you is how I'm often with my clients. I still show up as me. But I'm very gentle with shame. I typically say, you know, as you look at this, what comes up for you? Are you aware of any needs you have in the room for yourself and maybe from me? Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like any other process, you know, and the idea is not to force it or not to make it okay for them. See, I'm very careful to not, Gestalt therapists are very careful to not rescue the client. Mm. So the idea is like, hey, really, really arrive at this feeling and let's see if you can employ some curiosity around it. Mm. You know, I know this is really hard to look at. And if you get overwhelmed, if it's too much, if you're out of your window, we can take a step back. Mm-hmm. So, but it's the idea is I'm employing them to look at it with me and we're looking at it together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what I don't want them to do is to think that I'm evaluating them. But of course, if they do, then I can, you know, what's that about? Cause I know it's not coming from me. I know it's something that they're experiencing. Yeah. But it's the same thing. It's, can we get this feeling to fully arrive? And can we be curious about it? And what do you know about it? How does it come up? When does it come up? What do you do as a result of it? Mm-hmm. And again, that's something they can then put away in their owner's manual too.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain to people why Gestalt therapists are mindful about not rescuing clients from uncomfortable feelings.
Yes. Because if you rescue them, they don't actually gain that full awareness. It interrupts the process. We take away the information they could otherwise be assimilating.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this, of course, use clinical judgment. You know, I'm a really big fan of that idea of the window of tolerance. And if they're out of their window, they can't learn anything.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not just about evoking the feeling and them having the experience. It's done for the sake of them learning and assimilating it so that it's useful for them moving forward.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of therapists, when clients or younger therapists, I'm a professor too, so I work with brand new baby therapists. Mm-hmm. Their clients starts to get upset or cry, and they'll be like, oh, do you need something? You need to
right.
breaths. Let's calm down.
Right.
Like, no, don't interrupt it. They're showing up. They're showing
yes.
you who they are. And,
yes.
and that's real for them. That's coming up in their life. Like that's a real process for them. We don't want to cheat them out of the knowing of that experience.
Yes.
So if they're in their window of tolerance, now they can start to learn about, again, what it is, how it shows up, what to do with it. And we can't do that necessarily from an intellectual standpoint. So
mm-hmm.
actually, I'm going to digress here a little bit. We like to distinguish between insight and awareness. And insight is that intellectual understanding of, oh, yeah, I know that I get embarrassed
yeah.
when this happens. You know, a lot of clients really gain beautiful insights in therapy. Awareness is harder.
Yeah.
So, it's not the intellectual understanding of it. Awareness is, I embody that. I feel
yes.
that. I know how it works. It's like a deeper truth.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the thing that they can take. Because knowing about something intellectually, it still happens and
right.
they still get captured by the process. But knowing about it from that real bottom up embodied perspective, now they have a lot more resources and choices.
Yes,
so that,
absolutely.
That's why we don't interrupt it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So many good points there. Yeah. The awareness versus insight thing is huge. And I think of the awareness as, yeah, it's embodied and it's being in touch with like the felt sense of something, right? Like being able to feel the truth of something instead of just like reflecting on it from, you know, from above or from a distance. And the rescuing thing, as you were talking, I was thinking, that I think also it almost reinforces for the client that it's not safe to be feeling what they're feeling, you know, because they're showing distress. And then the therapist is responding with like, oh, let's regulate this and manage this and take care of this and fix this. And I feel like that creates an experience of like, oh yeah, these feelings need to be quickly, you know, managed or, you know, suppressed or dealt with or whatever. Whereas if a therapist can just like be with you, you know, while you're in pain or you're in contact with pain, it creates an experience of safety, right? That it's like, it's okay to like sit in this.
Yeah. That they're not doing it wrong or that mm-hmm. they are not wrong mm-hmm. in their experience. It just is, you know, mm-hmm. which is actually, I feel like a very accepting, loving way to be with somebody. You know, I can sit here and I can hold space for your pain. Mm-hmm. While we look at it and heal it together versus shutting it down, or, you know, the only time I'm going to come in and kind of do something to calm it down is when they're
right.
Gone.
Totally. You know? Totally. Yeah. If someone's flooded or they're dissociating or, you know, whatever, it's helpful. But yeah, I definitely have found that too with like, newer therapists, and especially with shame. Cause I think especially when a therapist hears someone in a shame space where they're, you know, the client is saying like, you know, I just feel all these horrible feelings about myself. And I think it can be a natural instinct for the therapist to want to scoop in and be like, no, you're wonderful. You're so great. Like, don't feel that about yourself. And one thing that I've talked about with therapists when I've been doing consultation work is people will ask me like, but how do you know that you're not like reinforcing someone's negative feelings about themselves by not intervening? Right. So if someone's saying like, oh, I feel these horrible things about myself, and you're just like, yeah, what's it like to be in touch with that? What's it like to feel that? Sometimes people have fear that's like, but aren't you reinforcing it? And I think it comes from maybe a misunderstanding that you either have to counter something or you're reinforcing it. Right. It's like either you have to be working against it or you're agreeing with it. But what you're talking about is this other way of being with something, which is like you don't have to counter it or agree with it. You just have to like be with it and connect with it and allow it to be felt. Right.
Yes. I mean, because the experience is happening, whether we put a value on it or not. So, you know, whether we say it's good or it's bad, it's happening for them. And that is their reality. So, I think it's better just to see what is. I'm a really big fan of telling clients, like, let's just see what's there. And if I have one of those like kind of rushes of compassion and I want to make it better for them, I'm allowed to show up with that. So that's what we call like the dialogic stance of Gestalt therapy. I'm allowed to include myself. I'm not telling them my content, but I am telling them how I'm impacted by them. So I might say something like, oh, you know, I can feel that gut punch right now. I want to make this better for you so bad because I can see how much pain you're in. And I don't want to miss the opportunity to explore it with you. Would it be okay? Would it be okay if we check this out together? So I ask the permission and I check in, but I still include, you know, my human responses to them. And my desire to be helpful or my desire to have them not be in pain. I can still let them know those things without, you know, without robbing them of their discovery.
Totally. Yes. I love that too. I think sometimes the way I have thought of it is like, I can share my compassion for someone, you know, that I'm experiencing, but also allow them to explore what it feels like to not have compassion for themselves in that moment. It's like, oh, you're being really hard on yourself, right? Like I'm listening to someone feel really bad about themselves or be really hard on themselves. And I can share like my experience of like, I just want you to know as I'm hearing this, like I'm feeling so much compassion for you. And I'm, you know, I'm seeing all of your strengths and all of your, you know, whatever I want to reflect back to them. And also I'm not trying to like use that to override what you're experiencing right now. Cause what you're experiencing right now is feeling really bad about yourself, you know, so I can also hold space for that.
Right. Right. Well, and if you bring yourself in, you're also creating an opportunity for them to see a difference and see a discrepancy, but it's not a, it's not now you should take over my
Now you should feel how I feel now.
Right. Exactly. You shouldn't feel bad about that. Yeah. Oh my gosh. If they could choose that they would.
Right. Right.
But it's just an inclusion. It's just me bringing myself into the work and you know, letting them know that I'm here or how I'm impacted. And it's a lovely, authentic way to be. And, you know, when I took a Gestalt class, it was like my Cinderella slipper. I was like, oh, okay. So I don't have to be this person in the white lab coat who's sitting there telling people what to do.
Oh my gosh. Yes. The like the blank slate therapist stuff has never been my shtick.
This is just a warm, you know, I think it lovely way like to be.
Yeah, very relational. It sounds very relational as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a key ingredient to Gestalt therapy is the relationship, you know, which, I mean, that begs the question of how do you find a good Gestalt therapist? Like, hey, talk to them. And do they feel like, you know, do they feel like a match? Because the idea is they're going to be authentic in the session with you. So whatever their personality is, is going to show up.
That makes sense. I was actually going to ask, like, how common is Gestalt therapy in terms of like, are a lot of people being trained in this? Have you found that it's easy for people to find Gestalt therapists if they're looking for it?
It's a pretty small club.
That's kind of what I was wondering.
There's not a whole lot of us. Although there's institutes, you know, all over the country and international. The institute that I'm affiliated with in Los Angeles, we have three programs. We have Los Angeles, we have Seattle, and then we have an international residential training. And the residential is really special because we go to Europe and then we have representatives from usually about 25 to 30 different countries come and train. And we can see that Gestalt therapy is a lot more popular in places like Europe. But there's an institute in Brazil. You know, I know that there's training facilities in Ukraine and Russia and United Kingdom. So like it exists, you just kind of have to know to know where to look. So it's a small club. Most people don't know what it is, or they only know that tiny little bit.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Well, maybe some of the therapists that listen to this will be moved to get trained in it after hearing you talk about it, because I know a lot of therapists listen here. What is the training or certification process like to go through?
There's no kind of big overarching like governing agency. So each institute has their own certification process. Our institute is actually very self-selected. It's not you do this many years and you sit for your exam and you're certified. It's you train until you feel you're ready and until you get enough of the faculty feel that you're ready, and then you go through your certification process. And for some people, it's usually several years because it takes a long time to be really good at this. Mm-hmm. We have to undo a lot of our learning, and we have to kind of let go of being socially polite a lot because we are working with things like shame and stuff that people tend to back away from. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people who do decide to get certified through our institute, you know, it's 5+ years usually before they go through certification. But we have a knowledge exam, we have an oral examination with a panel of faculty, and then they have to do a demonstration with a volunteer client. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once they receive passes on all three of that, then they're considered certified. But if you get a certified Gestalt therapist, they've really learned their craft.
Yeah. It sounds like it. Wow. Yeah. Very cool. Wait, so the last thing where you do like a session, is that where you record it and then you submit the recording for people, or you do a session with people in the room watching, or how does that part?
In the room watching.
Oh my goodness.
So that's actually our training. And so it's something that terrifies a lot of people, but I feel like it's a really amazing way to learn. Is it's an in vivo training. So our institute, you come to the training. Right now, we have virtual and in person, depending on which place you go. And you go into the room, and either a faculty will demonstrate a piece of work in front of the entire group with a volunteer, or a participant will do a piece of work with another participant, and they get live in vivo supervision from one of the experts. And then there's discussion and reactions and feedback. And I mean, it's a really powerful way to learn because we're teaching the way that we do therapy in the moment, phenomenologically now. So it's not removed. We're not talking about it. We're doing it in the moment.
Right. Yeah. That is very cool. They do similar with coherence therapy. Like when I've gone to coherence therapy workshops, you basically just are practicing with each other. Like they'll just put you in little triads where like one person's the therapist, one person's the client, and then one person's like an outside coach or witness to kind of watch and give feedback. And people will do sessions in front of a whole bunch of people. And so I'm slowly getting more comfortable with it. But when I was first doing it, I was like, no, I'm going to be like, knowing people are watching, I'm going to freeze up and I'm going to be horrible at this. And everyone's going to think I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm like, I swear I'm really good at this with my clients, but the having an audience watch you do it is like very intense. Like you really have to learn to be comfortable with that. Right.
It's a vulnerable space to be in. And yeah, when I was new at it, I was pretty terrified. But yeah. I think we expect that. So we try to create a really like warm, compassionate space. And when people freeze up, you know, it's not judgmental. It's okay, what do you need? You know, like let's look at this, like what's going on. And then they can say their process. I feel frozen. You're all watching me and I'm terrified.
Right.
Okay, check that out. So like we still kind of do some of that in the processing moment. And it really, like, again, it really gives people like a firm base, you know, it really helps them get more confident in the craft.
Yeah, totally. Very cool. I guess I'll just kind of leave it like open-ended and ask like, what else do you want people to know about Gestalt therapy, or what have we not talked about yet that you feel is important about this?
I think something that comes to mind immediately is that this model really lends itself to be inclusive. Mm. And that's what I like about it, because we're focused so much on the client's individual experience, and we look at it in the context of their life. So we base that out of Kurt Lewin's field theory. We look at the field. So that's the conditions in which they live. You know, so our time, our world, policy, politics, all of that stuff really creates who a person is. So because we are not trying to come in as the expert, because we consider the client as the expert on their experience, we're the expert on process, but they're the expert on experience. You know, it makes it so the therapist isn't saying you should do it this way.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Mm-hmm. Or that's not a healthy way, or you're being paranoid, which is what a lot of, you know, marginalized people are told all the time.
Yes, yes.
Right. So because we're really having them discover their experience and we're just there to help facilitate it, you know, I feel like it lends itself really well to being inclusive, you know, therapy for all people, you know, people of marginalized identities, because, you know, if the therapist is really trained to be phenomenological, they're not asserting whatever their stuff is on the client. They're helping the client develop and discover.
Right.
So that's something I feel is important to emphasize.
Totally. Right. Cause as you're exploring like someone's experience of their own life, obviously that is going to include their experience in like the larger world and their community and like socio-political status and things like that. And so it can be like, it's not just the micro mental health stuff. It's like where they feel and kind of the more macro scale issues as well.
Yeah. And we can really lean into that stuff. You know, the idea is not to necessarily be socially polite. The idea is to be curious, and you come in, well, what is it like to live in your body in these times, you know, and sometimes I, you know, bringing in, like, I know that I come from a different identity from you, you know, what's your level of comfort discussing this with me, or, you know, what do I need to know? And not to get them to explain themselves or to do the work for me, but, you know, so that we can connect, so that there's the availability for us to really look at stuff together.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I love that. Very, very cool. I'm trying to think if I have any questions left, but I feel like we just covered a lot in like in 40 minutes. I guess I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about where parts work and Gestalt overlaps. Like, how do you personally like to kind of use those in conjunction with each other?
I'd have to talk from my personal experience more. I can't speak from it as a representative of Gestalt, because I don't think every Gestalt therapist is really well versed in parts work and integrates it. But For me, it's just the most natural thing in the world to integrate parts work, especially since I'm a trauma specialist. And, you know, I'm so familiar with how different parts can show up when they're triggered. So let me think about that. It's still being curious with the part the way you would be curious with a person. Because, you know, parts are little versions of ourselves, you know? So I can do a couple of different things depending on their availability to it. I can have them speak as the part. I can have them not speak as the part, but speak as self, you know, speaking about the part or interacting with the part. It kind of depends on where they're at, you know, what their availability is to the work. But then I can still ask a lot of those really yummy process questions, like, you know, well, how's the part feeling right now? And, you know, what comes up for them? Can you feel that part in your body, and where does it exist? Right? How do you feel towards the part?
Yeah.
How does the part feel towards you? Which I know is pretty standard IFS stuff, but it's also very standard Gestalt stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just treating that part with the same type of curiosity and compassion and availability. And, you know, people tend to learn a lot from that, and like a lot, they get that really embodied awareness when they are attending to their different parts. And,
you know, totally. Yeah, that makes sense. And I was thinking too, it's like, when you're guiding someone to, you know, build that awareness of their experience with trauma, so often there's going to be multiple experiences that almost feel contradicting or in conflict with each other. And so I can see like parts work and Gestalt combined creating a space for that, where, you know, like if you're working with like attachment issues or that kind of thing, and there might be like two parts of someone that feel pretty different about it. And so getting to kind of let both of those parts have like their time in the spotlight or their time to process.
Totally. Another old school Gestalt intervention is two chair, which is different
than empty chair.
A little different than empty chair. Because empty chair is that unfinished business we were talking about, but two chair is for what we call a conflict split. That term actually comes out of Les Greenberg's emotion focused therapy. But
oh yeah,
yeah. But he's Gestalt trained, so it's all the same
oh,
stuff.
Oh okay,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, the two chair is a conflict split, and what that means is two parts of the self that are in conflict, right?
Yes.
So I want to do something, but I can't because I'm too scared.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can actually, if you do it kind of the old school way, you have the two parts sit in two different chairs and then they talk to each other.
Yeah.
And you can have the person talk as one of the parts and then go sit to the other chair and then talk as the other part. And
yeah.
And again, it's just another way to do parts work, but that's a very true like gestalt old school intervention. But it's the same same idea, because you know, we often have, you know, internal conflict, and that comes from, you know, maybe an ideological message that we got at one point that's in conflict with our current needs, or so being able to identify, like, you know, how old is this part, when was it built?
Yeah.
Like, what do you know about following that rule, and what's it like to have that, but then now also feel you want something different that violates this rule?
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very cool. Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all of this. What state do you practice in again?
I'm in California.
You're in California. Cool. Are you taking clients, or are you offering trainings, or where can people, you know, connect with you if they want to after hearing this?
Sure. My personal caseload is full at the moment, but I do own a group practice, and there are several other therapists, and they are all either gestalt or emotionally focused therapy trained. So they're all kind of in that process therapy realm.
Mm-hmm.
My private practice is called Goldsmith Psychological Services, and we're in Claremont, California, but we do telehealth. And then the Gestalt Institute, where I'm a co-director, is called Gestalt Associates Training Los Angeles, or GATLA. And we have a Los Angeles training, we have an online training, we have a Seattle training, and we have that international residential that happens in Europe over the summer. So we're in the middle of our trainings right now for Los Angeles and Seattle, so we wouldn't start again until later in the year. But our residential is open in the summer. So there's
awesome,
plenty of room to train, opportunities to train if you're interested in gestalt therapy.
Awesome. And I have those links you sent me, so I'll put them in the podcast bio too if people want to check it out.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Yes, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. And I will add this on the long list of modalities that I want to get trained in, because it just grows every time I do one of these. So
I'm sure. Lots of good stuff out there.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much, Stephanie.
My pleasure.